This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, 90.9 FM HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. First Friday of the month, it's the day we talk about dogs here on the program and dog trainers. Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm are with us once again. They're with the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. Listeners, if you've got questions about dogs, give us a call. Talk to Carol and Jim. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free 800-222-9455. Carol has a golden and a doodle, and Jim and Robin, his wife, have malamutes. So lots of dog experience here between the two of you. And you've been with the Dog Training Club for a long time.
Just had our annual meeting Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm.
Carol was elected president.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrown off the board.
He was not thrown off the board. Yes, I'll be president for the next year, and it'll be a good year.
Okay. What's happening?
I promise.
What's happening at the Dog Training Club this fall?
Classes, sign up now because they're filling fast and they start.
Sign up online.
Online, yeah. We've got a really nice new system in place, and I think people will find that very pleasant experience. And classes start, the orientation for home companions starts the 17th, and classes then start the following Sunday. We've found that a lot of people like to take classes on Sunday afternoons and Sunday evenings. So if that's a good time for you, and we offer
mornings.
What you want, and weekday mornings, and so.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. Sunday was never a day to me to think that people would like to do that, take classes, but they do, and so we offer them.
Hmm. And home companion, is that a basic mm-hmm. training class?
Mm-hmm. I think the name's pretty self-explanatory, Companion in the Home. And we call it Home Companion. And that's
so
the class
that's
that I...
that's why they call it.
And that's the class that I like to teach. I teach that class.
Okay.
Me too.
And Jim. We have four or five offerings of that each session. So tailored to fit. We have one during the day on Tuesdays and the others in the evening. And this session will be offering one on Sunday night as well.
Yeah. And at the end of that class, what will you and your dog be able to do?
Oh, you and your dog will have a better understanding of each other, hopefully. And walking on a loose leash and sitting and lying down on command and responding to the word stay and a nice recall. And we introduce a little bit of rally in the class. It's another level. We introduce just a cursory introduction to agility. So the dogs get to see some of those things. And we, I like dealing with some of the first-time dog owners or novice dog owners and letting them experience the fact that others are in their same shoes. You know, it's a big change in your life to bring a dog home. And I like to see that relationship grow and develop. And
Yeah. What's key to training a dog to walk with you on lead?
That's sometimes I wish I had the answer for that myself, but I manage to get others to do it. It's just getting the dog to understand that it's really best to walk with you and not pull and stray at the
right.
lead. And the easiest way to accomplish that, and we're not talking healing as we go further into the obedience realm, but just walking by your side, and the best way to achieve that is to reinforce in a positive way the dog at your side. Pulling is not comfortable for them either, but it gets them where they want to go faster. You have to resort to bribing them, in essence, to stay by your side and have some cookies with you and encourage them and just have a good time when they're right with you. If they want to pull, then stop. And he wants to say something so bad, I can hardly stand
me,
it.
Teach me.
Jim?
I call it water skiing, and that's when people come in, they have a 6-foot lead, and both hands are holding on one end of it. They're bent forward like they're water skiing,
mm-hmm.
And the dog is pulling in front. You have to train a dog to do that. That's not a natural thing for the dog to do. And I've told the story, and I'll modify it heavily, but a class that I wasn't teaching, but I was took over for somebody. Somebody after the class came up to me with a very small dog and said, "How do I keep my dog from pulling me around?" And I said something like, "It's physically impossible for this dog to pull you around unless you let it." I think people go into that water skiing position because they don't want to hurt the dog. So if the dog pulls, they kind of give in and let the dog go. What the dog is learning, though, is that it to go where it wants to go, it has to pull.
Mm-hmm.
So
and it gets where it wants to go that way.
You're training the dog to pull you. I think training with food is the best way to train, but a very good way to train is also when the dog pulls, just to stand there.
Stop. Mm-hmm. Full stop.
And the dog will keep pulling. As soon as the dog stops pulling, you start walking. And, of course, the dog is going to start pulling again, feeling that you're moving, and you stop again. And it might take 5 minutes. And you said, what's the key? The key in all dog training is patience. Sooner, one of you is going to give in and just make sure it's not you. But you wait again, and the dog starts pulling again, doesn't get anywhere. The way it got around before isn't working anymore.
It's not rewarding.
So they let up, and it figures out probably in 5 minutes that...
That quickly.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, they're far smarter than we give them credit for.
They're not getting anywhere unless they don't pull.
One of the biggest disadvantages to retractable leads is that very factor. And I love using them, too, but it's encouraging the dog to be 16 to 26 feet away from you. And they're great for exercise purposes, but it's kind of self-defeating unless your dog, you know, you give it a word that you want it by your side. Mm-hmm. But
the dog should be trained before you put it on the track.
Yeah, and people will put them, and what really makes me cringe is seeing people put a harness on a puppy with a retractable lead because, you know, that's encouraging the dog then to even pull more. They throw themselves into the harness, but everything has its place. Retractable leads have their place.
And
Jim's right. Yeah. Teach the dog where you want it to be and then use a word that allows them to
Most of our dogs are obedience trained. They're all leash trained. And we travel so much with dogs. When you stop at a rest area or someplace and you want to walk the dog, it's much better if they can get 25 feet from you because they want to do their own exploring. And we've had dogs that would not do their business on a 6-foot lead, would not. They'd hold it all weekend. And say, please, please go. And they're very, when you're traveling, either going to dog shows or whatever you're doing, there are very few places where you can safely let your dog loose. And so the flexies are very good for that. But I wouldn't use a flexie to train a dog.
No.
It's very bad
for
training.
Or when you're taking your dog shopping and...
Oh, no, no.
Oh, my God. I couldn't tell you the number of people that have their dogs... On a retractable lead, and Flexi's one of the manufacturers, but they take their dog shopping on it, and the dogs go down one aisle, and they're down the other, and so you really have no way to keep them from harm because you can't see where they are. And
you have the same problem as you have on a 6-foot lead, but now they're 26 feet away.
Yeah. Let's take a call.
Oh,
sure.
A call.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana are our guests this afternoon. We have a listener waiting to talk with us from DeKalb, line 4. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. I got a puppy. Actually, she's 8 months old now. And she's a great dog. She's half lab, half shepherd mix. So it's interesting to see what she's going to grow up into. But we went to a couple of training classes. It was we actually take the course, the beginner course for puppies. I don't know if I can say the name of the company.
Go ahead. We want to
PetSmart.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And it was an adoption.
They'll pay us.
It was actually
now, right?
Through an adoption agency that for parts for us was great because we didn't buy it, you know, through, you know, like say Pets Plus or whatever it is. But anyway, she has this big warehouse in Downers Grove we were going to for quite a while, and it did a pretty good job. But there's a couple of things I disagree with. One is, and this is maybe old school, my old dog that I used to have was a little bit different, you know, and the people used to tell us this, was when they were misbehaving or doing something her idea of telling the dog to stop it was like, uh-uh, instead of just saying no, which when you say uh-uh enough times, they don't understand it. They won't stop. So when I say no in a firm voice, not yelling at her, she seems to work, you know. And she's, now don't get me wrong, she's trained pretty good. She's doing pretty, she was top dog in the class, which is great when you're in a room with a bunch of other dogs. She, you know, her attention span worked out pretty good. The one problem I seem to have a problem with, and I get in an argument with my wife on this one, is that she likes to try and use me as the, I know it's the alpha dog. I'm supposed to act like the alpha dog, as far as wanting to gnaw on my hands gently, not, you know, or nip, you know, just a little nip, not angry nips. And I've been trying to break her of that. And it, you know, if I say no, or whatever word, doesn't seem to work, unless I grab her leash or collar, and kind of sit her down, not, you know, doing it inhumanely, but. And say sit, and she finally gets it after a couple of times. Now, is there something else I should be doing? Or I use treats as much as possible too.
The problem with the word no is not that it doesn't mean anything. It means way too much. In other words, if the dog's, let's say the dog's nipping at your hand, and you say no, do you mean no? Don't come by me. No, don't bite my hand. No, don't use your top teeth, you know, we know what we mean when we say no. The dog doesn't. And generally, people don't train dogs as to what no means. In formal obedience training, when we use the word no, and we don't use it that often, what we mean is don't move. So you train the dog to sit and stay, and you can use the word no. It doesn't mean stop biting me. Stop biting me means stop biting me.
Well, so if I say stop biting me, it would work better than...
No.
Because I've tried that. I'm sorry. It doesn't work, guys.
No, I know.
Everybody knows this.
Yeah, if you talk to the dog in English, they're not going to get it. There's a technique you can use when... And I've used it, and it's painful. But when the dog bites you, instead of acting like the alpha dog, act like a litter mate and go, and cry and dog cry. That is the signal, and I suspect that your puppy, and she's still essentially a puppy, was probably taken out of the litter fairly young. Because one of the things litter mates teach litter mates is biting is bad, because they'll bite each other, and you know, and when they're 2, 4, or 5 weeks old, they don't understand it. They bite each other, and the one getting bit screams, ah, and that's the signal to let go. Up, oh, see?
There. Let go.
So you can try that. There's nothing wrong with the word no if you have a training for it. I like uh-uh.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
Because it doesn't go through your brain. It goes straight to your mouth.
It's like clicker training where you reward with a clicker, and you go, it's fast.
Instead of no.
Also, there was a piece last night on All Things Considered, I do believe, that where they talked with a fellow who's really well known for training dogs and working with people and like the dog whisperer kind of a thing. And his advice is when you don't want the dog to do something, is sound like another dog would sound who's displeased, like, uh-uh. Would be fit within that. And then if you were going to praise the dog, do it in a high kind of thing. What do you think about that?
Well, dogs are never fooled. They know their dogs and that you're not. And we can try to imitate their voices, but we can never get them. If a dog bites you or nips you and you go, he doesn't think you're a litter mate, but he knows you're in pain. So he says, oh, okay, I'm not supposed to do that. I heard that story. And that particular gentleman grew up, I guess his father was an animal behaviorist specializing in dogs. And he grew up with a scientific father who studied all this, and then he was trying to apply it. We always talk to dogs in a high-pitched voice. The gentleman here said, well, I've said in English to my dog, don't do this, and they still do it. Well, the dog doesn't understand. But what the dog does understand is a tone of voice, and I think the gentleman on the story last night said the same thing. They, you know, it's the tone of voice,
right,
not the words. Mm-hmm.
Or, they know when you're...
And pulling your hands away at the same time you're going, uh-uh, and taking your hands away, they'll connect that pretty darn quick.
Mm-hmm.
But dogs explore through their mouth, and she's being gentle, as he indicated.
It's more of an invitation to play. Really.
Exactly.
Okay. So our DeKalb caller is back with us, and so we'll follow up, and then I've got a couple of other people who are waiting. So quick follow-up, DeKalb.
So I just wanted to explain, she was taken away early, like you said, only because she had parvo. And she was the runt of the litter, but we didn't get her until it was like 2 months ago. I think she was like 5.5 months old. So, you know, and she's fine. Everything's checked out great. So that was one explanation for the what you were talking about, the teething bit, because she wasn't around it. Plus, the people who were that had her crate trained already. So she's great in the crate; they have no problem. She doesn't do her thing in the crate. I mean, overall, she's a great dog. You know, outside of the digging, which normal dogs do, she doesn't tear into clothes, she doesn't tear into furniture, nothing. She's
no
like
fun at all.
I mean, outside of...
Give us a problem.
Oh, yeah, and the rough house play, you know, but I kind of limit that, and I, some of it is, my fault, you know, but, you know, I got to tell you, I the greatest thing I could say is the adoption agencies. They're great people, and I wish more people would adopt, whether it be cats or dogs.
Well, and don't forget, they
don't give enough credit.
They checked you out pretty thoroughly before they gave you a dog.
Yeah. Let's,
so you were acceptable on many levels for them.
Let's take another call. A listener in McLean County on line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a couple questions. We have a dog. Well, actually, all our dogs have eaten poop before. And is there anything we can tell us? Tell us what things we can try again to stop them, because one of them 2 nights ago ate poop and just managed to vomit all of it right in the middle of the hallway. And a second question.
And this is a problem?
Well, how many dogs do you have?
Two.
And where?
Two of them, yeah. Even the ones we've had before, they've all from day one have eaten poop.
What breed of dog is this?
This is part Beagle, part Basset Hound, we think.
And do you have a fenced backyard?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. One of the best ways is to just clean up just as fast as you can.
Right, yeah.
We have a problem, the same problem, except we have so many dogs and we have such a big area that it's virtually impossible to clean up everything. Although we have an old blind girl who keeps, you know, running into trees and running into doors, but she can find a pile on the outside that we can never find.
Mm-hmm.
But cleaning up as fast as you can, you know, watching the dog cleaning up. There are commercial products. And
yeah, meat tenderizer is one product you can use to put on the food.
No,
pineapple.
Yeah, to emphasize this, you don't put the meat tenderizer on the poop.
You put the food.
You put the meat tenderizer on their food.
It's a good – I'm glad you said that,
Jim,
because
– when we first heard about this, we put the tenderizer, and we're going, well, this doesn't work. So you got to put it on their food so that it's unpalatable for people.
Yeah, and pineapple juice works, but I can't imagine many dogs being fond of pineapple. There are commercial products that you can buy that you put on the food, and that helps. But
you try the pineapple juice itself, not the pineapple.
Oh, I'd go whole hog and do some pineapple chunks and some juice, too.
Oh, okay. All right. The other question is, and I think since you have so many dogs, you may have a good answer. How do you clean it out of the carpet? What do you put on there? I wiped it up with baking soda on it to absorb the smell and stuff. But is there anything interesting you guys do?
Once again, they're commercial products. We use a thing called Nature's Miracle.
I think that's the best one on the market.
Nature's Miracle?
Nature's Miracle. You get it at PetSmart, I believe.
Okay.
Or any other dog outlet. But anything like that, Nature's Miracle works pretty well. You have to recognize that you're never going to get 100% of it out.
It will get most of the odor out, but unless you clean it immediately, you're going to have staining. Sorry to say.
Yeah, the actual cleaning, though. I mean, the baking soda really works for the odor.
That does.
Yeah, but how about to actually clean the carpet? I mean, I know I'm asking you a carpet question.
Oh, you know, that's okay, because do you have your own rug shampooer?
Just a vacuum cleaner. We don't have you guys have.
You need to shampoo the carpeting. You can rent one, and they have special carpet shampoos that contain the same ingredients that Nature's Miracle does, that works, has enzymatic actions that will remove the odor. But you need to shampoo it, or at least use some dishwashing detergent, a few drops in some water, and use a scrub brush. Otherwise, you're never going to get the stains out, and you need to do that as soon as you see it.
Okay.
Scoop it up first and then do what I suggested.
To go back to the other problem, what do you feed your dogs?
I think they both get Purina. One gets a Fit and Trim, one gets a regular dog chow.
Dog chow or Pro Plan?
Purina dog chow.
Just the regular dog chow.
You might, I think it'll help a little. It won't eliminate the problem, but you might go to a dog food that has less protein in it and less fat. Dog chow is very high fat, very high protein dog food.
So if I go to like the dog chow also has Fit and Trim, we do that for the older
fit and,
dog?
Yeah, Fit and Trim is...
I can do that for both of them now?
How old is the...
Well, the second one is turned 2 years old in March.
So Trim is... really, for any dog, it's a weight management thing, but it does have fewer calories, and so you could try that. As I said, it just makes the feces less desirable because the dogs really don't digest everything.
So he's telling you to improve the quality of the food that you're feeding.
Well, it's good quality food. It's just too high calorie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, so he's old enough that I could take him. I can put him on there.
Oh, sure, he's done his growing.
His growth.
Yeah, he's done.
So, okay, all right, great. Well, thank you very, very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's take another call, a listener on line 2 in Indiana. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I was just calling to ask if you had any suggestions on how you deal with the death of your pet, your dog. A friend of mine has a dog, and he died about almost a month ago, and I was just wondering if there's anything should she go ahead and get another dog now, or should she wait?
You know, that's such a hard thing to do, to make that decision for somebody else.
Yeah.
Some people get a dog the next day. Others never get another.
Uh-huh.
Others wait a few months or weeks. There are some grief support groups out there.
Uh-huh.
The University of Illinois Veterinary Medicine College has a grief support hotline, and you can find that online, where she can call and talk through her grief and issues with people that are trained to answer and to listen. And sometimes that's very helpful to do.
Uh-huh.
And depending on the size of your community, there might be a grief support group for people who have lost pets in the area, and that's good to do because I've done all these things.
Yes.
And good friends are a big help, too.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
You're
have
welcome.
Have a good day.
Listeners waiting for us next in Champaign on line 3. Hi.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to remind your previous caller about the poop eating, that if you're using the meat tenderizer, it is the MSG that is the key. And there's so many meat tenderizers out there, but so many of them no longer have MSG in them. It is the MSG that stops it, and it's something you have to add to the diet at least, you know, once a day, and sometimes it takes up to 2 or 3 weeks before you see a response. But it's the MSG, and it's harder and harder to find these days. But
thanks for bringing that up, because
it hits home, and it does work if you stay consistent with it.
Thanks for bringing that up. I don't use meat tenderizer myself. I didn't realize that it was harder to find MSG.
Yeah. There's only about one brand that's pretty easy
to find
these
Adolph's,
days.
I think? Like the original?
I think it's Accent.
Accent.
But most of them, the tenderizing agent is salt, and that doesn't work. So, at least for the poop eating. It works for meat tenderizing. But
well, good. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Sure. You guys have a great day.
Thanks. Next, we talk with a listener in Champaign on line 1. Hi.
We talk about strange things, don't we?
Poop isn't strange.
Line 1, listener in Champaign.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I have a toy or miniature poodle, which is about 10 pounds,
And she's a very smart dog, but she has one thing I can't change, and that is I feed her hard chunk dog food, usually something recommended by the vet, TD. And she likes to eat it everywhere around the house except in her dish. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to change that?
Is it that much of a problem for you?
No, it's not a big problem, but, you know, I, you know, sometimes it's just you find it the food.
Yeah. What is TD? What's that for?
Thyroid?
I think it's just he likes the way it's formulated.
Is it for dental problems or it's a prescription food?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to guess toy poodles commonly have teeth problems. You can physically do you free feed?
That
is, do you feed, just put food down and leave it there all day, or
yes.
Do you have a specific time of day?
No, just all day.
You could go to a, the transition would be a little slow, but you can go to, I would go to feeding at a definite time of day.
Uh-huh.
The second thing I would do is soak the food for 10, 15 minutes in hot water. And that'll the food will absorb the water and it'll become a little softer.
Uh-huh.
I suspect what she's doing, if you're free feeding her, she's going up, she's picking up a kibble.
Right.
It's difficult for her to eat it, so she goes and finds a place, sits down, and it might take her a few minutes to eat one kibble.
Yeah.
And then she goes back and gets another one, and she doesn't want to just stand over the thing eating because she doesn't really eat a whole meal. In one sitting.
Right.
She'll eat.
If I soften it, would that take away the benefit for the teeth?
Well, that's what I was thinking.
I don't know why.
I don't know what properties that food would contain. If the crunchiness is supposed to, you know, help with her dental health, then yeah it would. But that's why I asked if it's that big of an issue for
no,
you.
I mean, we can live with it. It's just I would prefer not to if it's...
How long has she been doing this, by the way?
Oh, pretty much since we got her.
And how long has that been?
We've had her about 4 years.
Well, it'd be kind of
hard to change her eating habits after.
Yeah, yeah.
And not really necessary.
Well, the thing about soaking it is you can soak it for various lengths of time, and obviously over time it gets softer and softer.
Uh-huh.
So you can try to find the right balance between teeth hygiene and her ability to eat it.
Right.
What was I going to say? Oh,
You had a thought, a good one?
It's definitely true, though, when you soften the food, it's going to lead to a little buildup on her teeth.
Yeah.
The nice thing about the hard chunks without water is it tends to clean off the teeth as she eats it.
Yeah, that's, I think, why...
Yeah, you know, and there's so many dental products out there that they chew on them and it helps clean their teeth, and raw bones help with their teeth. So you'd want to make sure that's the exact reason for the diet prescription.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is for dental health.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it
is. But I wouldn't be surprised that even if you softened her food, this has become a behavior now, and she would take two or three moistened kibbles and go off and...
Yeah.
And eat them wherever she's been eating them.
Well, what you do, I'd go to a definite feeding time, is you put the food down, time it for 5 minutes, and pick it up.
Oh.
And see what she does. She'll probably pick up some food, go away, come back, and find that there's no food.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's good. And when you see her doing that, you can put it down again. But as you keep doing that, and when she comes back, there's no food, she'll learn... she better eat it, quickly, because it might not be there later.
And it may be painful for her to chew.
That's my concern, is the dentist has prescribed this to keep her teeth clean because she has teeth problems.
But
the problem is it hurts her too much to eat these hard
mm-hmm.
kibbles.
Mm. I don't think that's it. She seems...
The next time you go to your veterinarian, ask him exactly why it was he prescribed this food and explain the situation.
Yeah, I don't think she has teeth problems. I think he was doing it to avoid the problems.
Okay.
So,
Well, yeah, toy poodles typically can have those problems, and it's a good idea to take steps that they don't get it.
Brushing their teeth effective? Or?
Yeah, you can brush their teeth. They get plaque the same way we do.
Yeah.
They don't get cavities like we do, but they
can.
Get plaque. And they have gum disease.
They can have gum. And there are products that you can brush your teeth, but also it kind of you spray it on or squirt it on, and it kind of dissolves.
Yeah, don't use human toothpaste.
No.
Right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Next, we talk with a listener in Urbana on line two. Hi.
Hi. We have a new dog to our family. It's an Australian cattle dog, and we were wondering, one, just how to introduce him to the family, and also we already know the dog attaches to the female of the household and will guard that person, and how we can work to discourage that.
Did you just get this dog in the last week or so?
Yeah.
Did you have the dog at a pet store last weekend?
Yes.
Okay, I know who you are then. I saw you there. Yeah. And she's an adult dog, isn't she? Or 8, 9 months old?
She is an adult dog, yes.
Yeah.
How do you know she attaches to the female of the family?
Well, the dog was adopted from a rescue by a close friend of ours, and she kept the dog. And, you know, we would interact with the family, and we knew that the dog was attached to her. We babysat for the dog. And my friend is very busy, and this dog, you know, was spending lots of time at home alone, so we suggested that perhaps maybe we should adopt the dog since we're home all the time. And that's just what the dog does. I mean, I've watched him now for a year to a year and a half, and I know he's never bitten anybody, but he will guard if he feels like it.
Yeah. Is there any opportunity for him to interact with a male?
Yeah, there he has been now. He's my friend had a friend of her own that interacted with the dog a lot, and he's growing much better. And I'm married, and my husband is in the home, and my children are.
Oh, okay. So,
and the dog has been around her children as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, having a dog that threatens your spouse is not altogether bad. But what you can do, dogs put a big stake in touching. So when your husband's around and the kids are around, if the dog is kind of attached to you, just grab the kids, hug them, grab dad, hug them, and just display this in front of the dog, and then encourage everybody to pet the dog. That's kind of how they would greet each other. So the dog sees you interacting with these people, and you're touching them and saying, oh, these are fine, these are people. The dog will tend not to want to guard against them.
And depending on how old the dog was when it went into this foster home, and if it didn't have exposure to the male gender and wasn't comfortable with them, then it kind of stands to reason that it's more comfortable with women. And vice versa, you can have the opposite situation. So if your husband, if you want the dog to bond with your husband, I would think it would be helpful if you're husband was the one that took care of feeding the dog and walking the dog and interacting with the dog, not to minimize your interaction, but these primary functions that you most likely perform, have your husband perform them, and let the two of them form a bond of trust with one another. It could just be a lack of comfort in the dog's level with a man.
Yeah, our understanding is the dog was found as a stray, and then was owned by a veterinary assistant and who trained the dog, and the dog knows, you know, more commands than are even useful to me, but then got ill and got overwhelmed with the number of dogs she kept, and her dogs went into foster homes and then was let out and then has now arrived at our home.
So you're the fourth home that the dog has had.
No. Well, if you assume somebody owned him before he went stray, I think...
Yeah, if somebody did own him before he went stray, I'd be confident of that. So that's 1, 2, 3. You're the fourth home. And it's conceivable that he did not have a man in any of those four
homes. Any of those homes, no.
Perhaps one in the first home that wasn't too crazy about him, and that's why he was a stray in the first place. You never know.
It sounds like the homes, since so far as we know, didn't have any kids either.
My friend's prior to his adoption from the rescue agency, I doubt he was around men or children.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yes. kids don't really act like adults.
No.
If you know what I mean? They move faster. They're less predictable. Their voice range goes up and down very quickly. And so it can be confusing for a dog if they're not used to it.
Well, he's calmed down a lot.
Uh-huh.
Somebody else always feeds him. I don't feed him. And somebody else always walks him at least once a day.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are better handling my dog than I am. We have him signed up at this point where you saw the dog because mm-hmm. that's the most convenient time mm-hmm. for us. But
any kind of training is better than none.
Right. That was my thought, is that mm-hmm. he'd maybe been with me 2 or 3 days that day and that I immediately needed to do something or we were going to be in terrible trouble.
And then don't forget, your best resource is the adoption, the rescue group that you worked with as well. I'm assuming it was an Australian cattle dog rescue, or was it?
Somebody else rescued the dog and then couldn't. My friend rescued the dog, and then after about a year, her circumstances were so changed
okay.
that the dog was going to live in an apartment the rest of its life, which my guess is the dog needs about 2 or 3 hours of exercise.
Well, living in an apartment doesn't mean that it's just going to lay around and not get any exercise at all, because they'd walk it too. But I'm glad you've got the dog for yourself.
You can still go to the
the way we handled it was she's going to look for a dog that's maybe less active, and we're home every day, and we'd like the dog to make us more active with, hoping that we'll be a better match maybe.
You can still go to the rescue group. There are all kinds of cattle dog rescue groups.
Mm-hmm. And get advice from them.
And get advice from them, mm-hmm. and especially the one that your friend adopted them from, because they don't have a better handle on the history of the dog. I'm not real familiar with cattle dogs. I've met a couple.
But we have people in our community that are very familiar with cattle
dogs.
We
have somebody in our community who wrote the book on cattle dogs.
The book on cattle dogs.
Right.
Maybe she's listening.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, that would be helpful. He's not a nipper. And my understanding is that they first tried to place him herding, but he doesn't like to herd. And I don't know if, he's too tall and he doesn't like to herd. I don't know if that's why he was eventually found stray.
My guess would be not.
Yeah, most people don't get cattle dogs to herd.
No, and there's nobody they're going to herd around here.
And unless you develop that at a fairly young age,
it's not going to come.
We had a Malamute once we tried to teach to pull a sled when he was 5, and he said, "I'm sorry, I haven't worked up till now. I'm not going to start now."
Seriously.
Is there any way to tell this dog, because he looks at me all the time, to tell him that it's just okay to go lay down, that I'm not going to leave?
No, it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. So look at it from his perspective. This is conceivably his 4th home. He has no way on earth of knowing that he's not going to go to a 5th home next week.
Yeah.
So you can talk to him in reassuring tones. It's going to take time and effort mm-hmm. and consistency and love on your part to get him to get it, but it could take a long time.
A long time. Yeah, I just look at him and say, "Do you ever relax?"
No, he probably doesn't lay down at all until he goes to bed and crashes.
Yeah, I don't think he slept the first few days. He just mm-hmm. stayed awake and made sure I was still there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could give him, I would give him little commands. If he's with you and you're in a room and you're going to stay there, tell him to sit, tell him to down. That's, in many senses, that's what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking to you for leadership. Give him some leadership.
Well, yeah. I mean, people who know how to command him, he's very comfortable with. It's almost like he's mm-hmm. with them than with me, because he knows he's supposed to be a canine good citizen, and he's supposed to have had something called rally training, and I don't know what he
means. Oh,
really,
you're so lucky. Have you had a dog before?
Not since I was a child.
See, this is when I was talking earlier about training classes. It's as beneficial to the person as it is to the dog, if not more so. Yeah.
I just kind of feel that probably doesn't mean anything because I'm not trained.
Yeah.
The dog understands.
Yeah, and you will develop a relationship with him that's good.
When you go to the classes, they'll teach you all the commands. Rally is a type of obedience competition. Where you go in and you do very little exercises, and it's timed. So and it's a lot of fun, but it involves regular obedience exercises.
And see, he was used to that. So,
and he knows it, obviously.
Was he adopted locally? Is he from this community?
He's from North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's not from here at this point, mm-hmm. no.
But if you worked with him maybe for even 5 minutes a day in the obedience stuff, even if you don't know what it is, he knows
just
what it is.
Just sitting down,
he'll have a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he likes it. He never, I guess, fetched before. We were able to teach him how to do that pretty mm-hmm. quickly. And he's a smart dog.
And one thing
child, but a smart dog. Yeah.
One thing about cattle dogs, they are working dogs. So they need to have some purpose in life and something to do. So that was brilliant on Jim's part to tell you, to give him something to do. Even if it's something that mundane, that's what he's structured for, is to work.
The way we dog people say it is the dog needs a job. Give him a job.
Or he'll find one, and you might not like the one he finds, and that would be guarding you.
Yes, mm-hmm. that may be it. Maybe that's mm-hmm. what we need to do because today somebody gave him a command. You know, we were with another dog, and somebody was asking him to do his different things and gave him a command, but then forgot to release him, and I didn't think about it. And, you know, 5 or 10 minutes later, we realized the dog is still holding his pose, and we let him go. But, yeah, maybe
he was
happier
doing that. Oh, it sounds like a
great dog. Yeah. Go to the library and get a good book. Get What All Good Dogs Should Know. I like that one. Or get one of the dog training books for dummies. I hate the name, but they're good books. And read through that before you start your classes, just to understand what it is that he perhaps knows and how you can help him.
Okay. What All Good Dogs Should Know?
What All Good Dogs Should Know.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's probably what we needed to know.
It's something that's pretty basic, and you'll learn a lot.
And remember what Jim said earlier this afternoon, patience. And I think that mm-hmm. with love and having the children around and two adults in your home all day, I think that within time, mm-hmm. I don't know how long it'll be, but I think this dog is going to come round.
Mm-hmm. He's done so much better, you know, over this last week.
Yeah, he was not real comfortable last weekend when I saw him.
Well, we were told to get him out of bed, and that, I think, helped, too. You know, he accepted that very well, which his former owner had let him, you know, wanted him out of bed, but couldn't get him out.
Oh, he slept with them.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So we were able to get him out of our bed where he thought he belonged, and he's now sleeping on the floor by the bed. I don't know if we should just crate him at night.
No, you know, just take one thing at a time. Don't overwhelm him.
Yeah, because she said, at least get him off the bed, and that seemed to make sense. Mm-hmm. And my children and my husband are feeding him and playing with him and walking with him. And we took him to, we're home, we're homeschool, so we took him to playgroup and, you know, maybe 20 different people interacted with him, and he was happy. The only thing he does that is disturbing is he'll roll on his tummy and it looks like he wants to be petted, but he really just wants you to go away. Mm. And I kind of look at him and say, why don't you just stand up?
Well, you'll find out all these things as time goes on with him.
Yeah. If you don't want us to pet you, or you're in the act submissive, and it's a little, if I could just tell him to stand up. And maybe he would if I told him to. I don't know. Well, I'll let you go and take another caller.
Okay, thanks. Actually, we're at the time where we have to wrap up here pretty soon. You know, we it's been a couple of years now, but we adopted a cat, a 5-year-old cat, and when we got him home, it took him a while mm-hmm. to warm up to us, and he could hardly meow, you know. He'd open his mouth like he was going to meow, nothing would come out.
Oh, my.
And when we put our jackets on to leave the house, he was like, skittish.
Mm-hmm.
That went away. It took months, though. It took maybe 6 months. And now, boy, does he have a lot to say.
Where have you guys been?
And another thing.
And another thing. That's exactly it. He's turning into a bossy cat. So, well, there we have to leave it. We're out of time. And our guests this afternoon, Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana, will be back with us next month on the first Friday, October 2nd.
Oh, my God. gosh, October.
October.
And here we go. Now it's in September, then the holidays start. We're off Monday, then October, then November, then December, all holidays, and then January is here before we
sledding know it. Season.
Where you.
Okay. We'll leave it there. We'll talk with Jim and Carol again next month in October, October 2nd, Friday.